Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. This week's special guest is Kelly Zmanickas, talking about Brock and John's Unrehearsed. Keep on listening to Comedy Album Book Club. Thanks for tuning in. This week we have a very special friend of the podcast, my co-host on Order Up, Kelly Zmanickas, super funny comedian, documentarian, and awesome person. She brought us Brock Simpson and John Mitchell's Unrehearsed. This is an album from the mid-90s, a comedy duo, sketch and musical comedy from Toronto. Not a lot of history on this one. Just listen to the episode. You're going to have a great time. Take care.
Zmanickas, my first guest in a long time.
Yay.
Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club.
Oh, thank you so much. Do you? I was just wondering, do you have a name for your studio?
No, I'm going to have to figure one out.
I think Ardell Sound.
That's sounds a good, good name. That's our
just
good
sounds
name.
Good. Just yeah. Came to mind.
Yeah, I will. Ardell Sound. Welcome to the Ardell Sound Studio. So how have you been doing?
I've been good. It's always, I think, a loaded question when you're of a certain age. You can, go down so many roads.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How really am I doing? But I think overall, I have things I could complain about, but the good outweighs the bad. So
that's always that's the general sum you want to end up at. It's
exactly.
Nothing's ever always going to be great.
Right.
It's just like, what's the math work out to?
Exactly. Even in a Disney movie, there's a villain.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
So yeah. But I'm good. I'm good.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, you have brought me a really interesting blast from Toronto comedy past.
I know.
I've never heard of it. Unrehearsed, 1995, by Brock and John.
Yeah.
Brock Simpson and John Mitchell.
Yes.
So how did you find this?
So I started in comedy, I think around, I want to say 92 or 93 in Toronto. I was working as a stage manager and a tech for sketch shows, because with Kids in the Hall and that kind of vibe, Toronto was a real hotbed for sketch comedy and improv. Definitely stand-up was happening, but sketch was the thing, you know? And so I was working at clubs that don't exist anymore, like Big City Improv, Do Some Time at the Rivoli, wherever a show was being put on. So Brock Simpson was somebody I would always kind of meet in passing. Mm-hmm. And John, I didn't know as well, but they were kind of the dudes you wanted to be involved with a show in at that time. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were hot on the Fringe circuit, the Toronto Fringe circuit, and just were like the guys you wanted to hang out with. So it was from my days as being a stage manager that I was sort of tipped off in their direction. And I can't think of how many shows I stage managed for them. I feel like it was two. But definitely one of them, Kid Canuck, was one of the shows I stage managed for Brock. But yeah, just amazing lyricist, super funny. And we're just like the it duo of, you know, they were friends. They weren't a couple,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It was just like the it guys that you wanted to hang out with and do a show with.
Yeah, so it's kind of neat that, you know, I mean, this is just around the slightly, this would be when Kids in the Hall were on TV. So
exactly.
This would be in the follow-up to that. And
yeah.
I do really remember there was a lot of sketch comedy, a lot of, just like you said, it's just that was that time.
It absolutely was. Like, it's wonderful to go and think back and think of, like, all the times that I was, you know, as a teenager running around on the subway trying to get props to make things and, you know, build this and do that and then still, you know, be amongst at least when I started, the smoked-filled comedy clubs. So building props amidst the haze of all the cigarette smoke and everything.
Youngsters today don't understand how much of a different time it was.
Oh,
in the 90s.
It was so different. I mean, I would come home from, you know, nights working at, you know, wherever on Queen Street, and my mom would be like, get in the shower, you smell like an ashtray. Like, I was... I just stank. But it was so much fun. And I remember the CBC, I can't think right now of what year it was that they did this, but the CBC had a sketch comedy show. They had done comics where they highlighted comedians in a little special, but then they had a sketch series, which I believe was called Sketchcom, if I'm not mistaken. And so to get a spot on that show and see those things that I was rushing around to, like, Active Surplus or, like, wherever I was going to get props, and to see somebody build the things that I built, you know, in my basement, but, like, on an actual TV set.
Yeah.
I remember when Don Ferguson and Roger Abbott came to the Rivoli to watch a troupe I was with at the time called The Stand-Ins. Mm-hmm. And there was such a, oh, Roger and Don are here, because they were from Air Farce, this very beloved Canadian series that I ended up working on years later. But that was like, we knew we were on sort of the tipping point of something really cool happening. So it was a really great time to be on the Toronto comedy scene, because stuff was coming to life, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, we still have a bit of that. I mean, when you look at acts like... Tall Boys, you know, Bruce saw them at Sketchfest
exactly.
and said, I want to produce their TV show. So we still have that a bit, but it doesn't feel, it doesn't feel as present as it was back then.
And there was a grit. I think when you're, you know, when you were coming out of the 80s and trying to figure out what the 90s were going to be, there was this sense of play that I don't feel as much around anymore, but it was just like messy and risky and funny and dark and but just goofy and and it was a great time to figure out who you were as a comic, what people were gravitating towards, the silliness, the bizarro. It was just a really fun time to see stuff come to life in this city.
And that's one of the things, listening to this album, because we just sat and listened to it together, which was amazing, because it's not of it. Audience,
you can't
if you
find
go
it
looking
anywhere.
For this, good flipping luck.
Basically, come to my house and I'll play it for you.
But, which is unfortunate, because it's funny as hell. It stands up.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get many comedy duos to begin with.
Right.
It's more common in musical comedy, which is what this is, but that alone you don't get much of, even in the sketch world. But it reminded me of, you know, Kids in the Hall a lot,
yes.
because it had that sort of absurdist sort of Brucio kind of energy to a lot of the sketches. And it mixed the album itself mixed sketches.
Yeah.
Which held up. I don't know if they just actively went through their sketches that they recorded and these are the ones that are visual but we do are descriptive enough or or storytellery kind of enough that they don't need the visuals. Whereas just, you know, I mean, it's either great writing or great editing. Either way, that's an incredible skill.
Yeah, and it's really not date stamped of the time too much. Like, there's one line where they refer to sending a fax.
Yes.
In one of the songs.
And it's in a and a payphone, which exactly, I think there's like one phone, left that all the drug dealers in Toronto use right now.
But other than that, you're right. Like, sitting with you and listening to it, they just sound like really good 90s songs, you know, mixed amongst some live action sketch. So
and I mean, it was neat too because they would mix, there's a mix of live performance and produced performance. So you got a really good judge. It's like, you know, somebody with a ukulele or a guitar up on stage singing, it's like, okay, they're good in that format, but can they bring it? And there was like a Weird Al level of parody skill. I mean, maybe not Weird Al because that's sort of like parody Beethoven, but it was up there because, I mean, as I was sort of thinking about what bands I could hear.
Yeah.
And I mean, I heard Bryan Adams, like that last song.
Yeah, Me and the Boys.
Me and the Boys, definitely a Bryan Adams vibe. The Spinal one.
Spinal.
had a very shadowy man on a shadowy planet feel to me.
Yep.
You had some Treble Charger, Pursuit of Happiness, Bare Naked Ladies, which are all contemporary bands of that era.
Yeah, Arrogant Worms a little bit too.
Yeah.
You know, just in the wordplay. Yeah.
So you had that. You had stuff that felt like you turned on Much Music.
Yes.
Between me embarrassing myself at Speaker's Corner and the music videos, you could feel these sounds in the air of Toronto at that time.
Yeah.
So it was it was kind of cool because it brought me back to, like, you know, first year university, you know?
Right.
It was like, like, I would be down the street, you know, at Sanctuary or Savage Garden dancing away, and then this would be just a few doors down.
A few doors down, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our paths probably crossed on Queen West back in the day.
Very much so. Very much. Guaranteed.
But you're right in that you would have seen that. I mean, I know Much Music, as I remember it as a teenager, is no longer in existence. And I don't think it lasted online either. But but you would have seen Me and the Boys, which is a song about guys trying to get a song right, which is just a wonderful, wonderful turn there in the tune. But you would have seen that video on Much Music. Like 100%, you would have seen that mixed in with, you know, like a Led Zeppelin or a B&L or a Michael Jackson and then Brock and John. Like, you would have seen that on TV, which is so great. But Brock... I'm just looking up at, like, the different shows that he wrote, but he had, like, Honest Ed, The Bargain Musical, Kid Canuck, This Could Be Love, kind of in that whole, it came a few years later, but, like, that whole Drowsy Chaperone era, which was born out of a wedding gift to Janet Vandergraff and Bob Martin, became this huge Broadway hit. But it was, like, kind of along that lineage of those wonderful musical comedy shows that Brock just was so good at crafting, you know? Yeah, super talented guy. Also, I mentioned it earlier. I think he's, like, featured in the Prom Night movies, if I'm not mistaken. He's also got, like, just total sidebar, weird acting gig too. But no, such an amazing lyricist, and those two just made such a killer comedy combo.
Yeah,
you know.
But I mean, and you know, it's not just the musical parody that works because it's a 17 track. Album. It ranges from about 30 seconds, the longest is 9 minutes.
Yes.
Which you think is too long just looking at that number. And it is actually probably the most visual.
Yes.
King Joe
is the track.
which, you know, it. And that one had as opposed to, like, the others, which tapped into pop music, this tapped into a very, like, Les Mis, Shakespearean vibe.
Yeah.
and was so Toronto.
Oh, so Toronto. And you've got, like, if you're able to find and listen to it, friends, it covers all of the parks in the city of Toronto and just has elements of it that I feel like today wouldn't be terribly kosher in how they refer to some people who, as we say, unhoused. But again, going back to that sort of period, there's a lot wrong about it, but it still works. And they find a caring aspect to it and a sympathy in it. And it goes, you know, it goes kind of, oh, no. But then, I don't know, they find the heart of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's wonderful. Not mean.
No.
Like, yeah, it's definitely, there's nobility in these characters. Yeah. Yeah. And very much so if you ever hear it. And it's yes, there's language that doesn't age well, but it wasn't used maliciously. It was
absolutely
used
not.
Because that was the language that we used at
yes.
the time.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's something audiences struggle with in contextualizing. And I mean, that's one of the things on Comedy on Book Club I really try to make sure we do, is we contextualize this within the voice of the period.
Correct.
And that was the thing. It was like they took a story about unhoused people. Mm-hmm. And the parks, and which was, you know, just as it is now, it was very much a problem. I remember that period where I'd be coming home from clubs and you'd have cops going, I'd be getting like a sub after leaving the bar, and you'd have cops coming in and trash talking squeegee kids, who, because that was the big thing in the mid-90s,
with
kids from Montreal and the East Coast running away from home and living on the streets, cleaning windows, just trying to make a dime. Literally back then, a dime.
Yeah, a dime.
Yeah.
Which got you a lot more.
Yeah. You could actually buy things with a dime. So it is, and I think this kind of spoke to this. I mean, it's more geared towards the elder, unhoused.
Yeah.
But it was very much just like, you know, these people are people with a story.
Yeah.
And, you know, we shouldn't ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like all of these. Like, you had like the Simon and Garfunkel and Mrs. Crenshaw.
It's such a beautiful song.
It is. Like, if I just heard that and wasn't paying attention, I'd go, oh, this is lovely. it's that sort of pop folk vibe.
Yeah. It's like if Mrs. Robinson just aged 20 years, you know?
was
hanging out with Mrs. Crenshaw in her, you know, careful footwear.
Yeah.
And then, supportive footwear.
And you have that juxtaposed with, like, Son of Hello Larry.
Yeah.
Like, leading right into that. Sorry, my notes are a little illegible here.
That's okay.
Where it was just such a weird and silly, fun little tight bit.
Yes. Yeah, they threaded those little live segments, which in the album notes says it was recorded at the Little Alex. I have...
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I have a feeling that would have been the poor Alex on Brunswick, which is now no longer there. But there was a sister theater to the Royal Alex Theater on Brunswick where I cut my comedy chops back in the 90s, going back to Roger and Don. Air Farce started there. I mean, that nook right beside the Future Bakery is Toronto comedy, like, sacred ground.
Which is nice that now we have
the lab right beside it. Yeah,
I mean, that is an interesting space. If I ever perform there, I got to talk about the date that I had there years ago. Where it was my ex-wife, and it was a goth bar back then.
I went there when it was a rave club.
It went through some transitions because it was like it was like the kid. They're like the owners of Futures. It was their kids who ran it,
and
It was called like Lenin or something like that.
Yeah, it's been a few things.
Yeah, but it was like a communist-themed goth bar.
Yeah, where that corner is historic.
Yeah, a lot happened. And I literally just lived right down the street, so I just like stumble home.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's nice that it's at least still a comedy space.
Definitely. Yeah, the comedy roots run deep there. I mean, even if you go across the street, it's now, I think, like a used clothing shop. But when it was the Brunswick House and the Skecherson started there with Gary Radout Jr. And yeah, that corner of Bloor and Brunswick, I mean, I know Honest Ed's is no longer a space and Markham Village is no longer a space. But for those who don't know, like, the Toronto Fringe Hub being there and the comedy that came out of those blocks around Bloor and Bathurst, that needs a plaque, if anything, yeah. I think, because so many laughs are just embedded into that concrete from over the years with, you know, guys like these. And Lisa Lambert is another voice on the album. Lisa went on to pen Drowsy Chaperone and win herself Tonys. But she was in the slur.
Yeah, the cha-cha song.
Yeah, which is
such fun.
That I was
just like, so hilarious. It was just like, oh
when
my God.
When you do the slur. do. It's so fun.
Such a great song.
Yeah. And then that trombone thing, they do one of the little incidentals that they put in between the songs. They have 77 trombones where Brock has confused coronets with corvettes.
They're pulling the floats. There's no floats in a musical band.
I love that.
Yeah.
As someone who for years spent her life convinced that the Bee Gees had a song called Four Letter Woman. it is more than a woman, just so you know. I can relate to thinking there were Corvettes in that song. I love it. But can we please talk about my favorite track on the album?
Okay, yes.
Oh, can we please?
Yeah.
So there is a song that even in the note I sent you, I call it the Get in the Van song.
Get in the Van song, yeah.
It is not called that. It's called Like It or Not.
Yeah.
It is so dark.
Yeah.
It is
that was the one that reminded me of Treble Chargers Red.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember that, but that's sort of like melodic, sweet, sort of melancholy sound.
And it's about a kidnapping. Like,
Get in the van next to Stan.
But they, at the end of the track, they just kind of go high in their falsetto in a tone I can't sing. But it's just that line, get in the van right next to... I slapped my knee, friends. Yeah. I actually slapped my knee. I love how beautiful that song is.
Yes.
And how effing dark it is. But it makes me howl.
And that's oh the thing God. that I love about musical comedy when it's applied properly. You can
yeah.
get these wonderful juxtapositions that really yeah. can punch up a joke.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because, I mean, yeah, it's one thing to go dark and, you know, to play sort of like twee off of that. But mm-hmm. just because, like, when there's certain things that a song has, like, so music is so ingrained in our psyche growing up.
Yeah.
And certain feelings and certain expectations when you hear things, to have it twisted that way is like the ultimate comedic turn.
Yeah.
And it's really, really amazing.
Yeah.
Now you yeah. have an album.
I do.
Sugar and Spice and Smirnoff Ice. Yeah. So did you get any, like, what kind of inspirations when you, because I mean, that's much more story-based and autobiographical.
Correct. Yeah.
Did you pull any inspirations from your time working in this era and maybe, like, from this album at all?
I actually didn't. But I think for me, the absurdity, I always try and find the absurdity of life, which I think growing up in this era of Toronto comedy has always stayed with me, of the mm-hmm. silliness of it. So while my album doesn't go into musical comedy, I wish I could sing and pen a tune to, you know, Sugar and Spice and Smirnoff Ice. That would make a great little classic, you know, 50s jive or something. But I think the influence is just trying to find the silliness in everyday life. I don't really dive into political stuff or, you know, I'm not a raunchy, you know, kind of in my tone or anything. Like, I'm pretty light. Mm-hmm. I feel I can try to be as relatable as possible, but I still try to find the absurdist stuff. Because, like, Brock and John, Kids in the Hall, SCTV, going into, like, Monty Python, when Letterman started and he was tossing, you know, watermelons off the top of the building. I love that kind of bizarre stuff. So I do try to find, like, the silly and the mundane of life. So
I find that in Canadian comedy... In specific, we tend to have that thread in a lot of our comedians. Even topical, it just feels like it's there mm-hmm. in the undertone of a lot of our work.
Yeah.
And I think it's nice.
I think it's nice, too, because it's like SCTV... And I mean, I've been much like yourself, like I've been a longtime viewer of Saturday Night Live and I love SNL. But what I always loved about SCTV and Kids was it was just so weird.
Yes.
And I love that. I haven't. Yeah. And I mean, maybe, you know, if I do an album again or like a YouTube special, you know, maybe I will try to find more, even more of the absurdist silliness in my life, because it certainly is there. But I just, that to me is like a comedy comfort blanket, you know, is that just the bizarro, like, you know, I referenced Arrogant Worms earlier and they've got this like hot dog song. Where they reference hot dogs as being the particle board of meat. And it's like, I love that kind of wordplay. Yeah, that's like a comedy goal, is to have that kind of thing in my arsenal where I can do something like that with words. So,
The good thing I find too, though, I mean, as much as we've lost a lot of these spaces, I still think that heart is in the Toronto comedy scene, at least in the sketch and improv world.
Yeah.
The stand-up world is different.
Yes, very much.
But, you know, I think it's there. Like, you know, I was at Sketch to the Death recently, and it was just there's this one sketch that was done where they just took cell phones from audience members. Like, they asked. They didn't take
for sure.
And it's like, oh, let's go through your last... Your get rid is like this. It's like a picture of Ellen, then another picture of Ellen, then another picture, and it's just like getting closer. And it was just like, this is weird. And it's like embracing that silliness. So, it's unfortunate we don't have as much of that in the stand-up world. We do. We have a few. I mean, like, Maria Bamford is a perfect example of somebody who embraces the sort of, like, bonkers nature. But I feel it's, like, left the common voice in stand-up.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm even thinking just now to, like, my writing style. I have long, long dreamed of, like, being a late night writer for Seth Meyers. Mm-hmm. That has been on the proverbial vision board for like ever. I'm not good at writing like I'm such a fan, but I am so not good because I've taken enough classes to know this is not my shtick. This is not my shtick. But I'm just realizing sketch, I could write with my eyes closed, mm-hmm. and all of the writing classes I've ever taken, that's where I've excelled in. So there's been something that I absorbed from my time, you know, back on the scene in the early 90s and watching those shows that did. So it's just like, you know, a matter of sort of finding, you know, where I fit in terms of comedy as like my one and only job rather than like the ninth thing I do in my day so I can afford to be a stand-up comic. But I think there's something about Brock and John and all these guys that did make an impact on me, because when I do write a sketch, it's solid. I can do it so quickly. Mm-hmm. And it whereas headlines, I am sweating to get three out, you know.
Yeah, during the pandemic, I took a class through Flappers.
Yeah,
which they have wonderful. This is not a paid advertisement.
Yeah,
they have wonderful online classes that are still running.
Yeah, the late night writing one, I think, is the last one left.
Yeah, so I took the intro level late night writing one, and I got a couple of really good ones. And I had Elon Musk sent space tourists up, and my teacher's like, well, check out this headline from like Kimmel the next day. And it was like literally my joke. And I was like, oh yeah. So signed up for the next level, three classes. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to waste this teacher's time. Very nice guy.
Yeah.
But
I know who you're talking about. Yeah, he is. He's a really great guy.
And I actually appreciated his candor.
Yeah.
Because it was like, oh, I need to go back and two more reps, which is better than wasting his time for my time if I'm just not ready.
Well, he was the one who told me that The Tonight Show with Fallon, they hire a separate sketch team.
That makes sense.
So I'm like, that could be on the old vision board too.
Darn team. You know, so. I mean, it's Jimmy Fallon, but...
Yeah, I mean, I
like Jimmy.
Jimmy.
He's just... I prefer Seth.
Comedy there, it's so funny how you can like, you know, want to do something so bad, and it's like, I want to be on that, and it's like, I can't, I suck at that, but I write good sketches.
I think the thing makes me love Seth so much is how he elevates others.
I like him a lot.
And I mean, Jimmy does too. I mean, nothing against
There's a
Jimmy.
Kindness to him, and there's a lightness that I think he's an interesting culmination of all the Tonight Show hosts, like where, you know, he's taken things. I think my favorite probably of all time would be Steve Allen.
Yeah.
Which I was not alive around when I was not alive when he was doing it, but but he had. But again, it was because that was new, you know, and that ground hadn't been broken before. Whereas that's sort of what it was like doing stage managing for these troops back in the 90s in Toronto. No one had been, we were trying to figure it out and what worked and what didn't work. And there's so much fun in that sense of play that, you know,
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's very much a direct line in that era. Because, I mean, if you look at the venues and the places and the spaces where they were located, a direct line from the, like, the punk, punk culture to the sketch culture.
Yeah.
Because, and not, and again, you know, I do more stand-up than I do sketch, but not to the, that line isn't there for stand-up. I mean, stand-up is just, especially in the 90s, very corporate, with Yuck Yucks dominating the scene.
Yeah.
That was probably its peak, where it had the most venues across Canada, and it had its, like...
That's true.
Rough contract, where they owned you as, as an act. But sketch didn't have the mainstream appeal that it did. I mean, it was respected because you had SCTV.
Yeah.
But it, it had a...
But it was underground.
It's underground. Yeah, it was underground. It had underground. This punk-hungriness. Yeah. That you, where it was like people out, like, it's interesting. I think it's like there's a wax and wane with the two styles of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, when it's like the brick wall, Caroline's on HBO at its peak.
Yeah, improv on Annie.
Yeah. And that's sort of like when, and when sketch is sort of like at its low point in the popular culture. In the just consciousness, not as what, not with regards to the quality, but with how it's recognized. And that I find is when the most interesting stuff comes out, because of that. We got Kids in the Hall, we got
In Living Color in the
Living
States.
Color, Mr. Show.
Yep. Mad TV.
Yeah. So so it's like it's a cycle. It's a cyclical kind of give and take. And yeah, so I really appreciate you introducing me to this album.
I'm so happy to. I wish more people could hear it. It is so, if you can find it, it's called Unrehearsed by Brock and John. And if you can find it, you should be given $1 million, because I don't know where it exists other than on the CD I am holding right now.
Or like in their attics or basements in a box somewhere. Like, But, well, if people wanted to find you, where can they look? Just see where you're playing or check out your posts?
Certainly. So on YouTube and Facebook and on X, you can find me under Kelly Zemnikas. And on Instagram and the quaint community that is Threads. It's the cottage community of social media. Come join us for a tea. It's so quiet and nice. you can find me under the Latvian Foodie. That's LATVIAN, the Latvian Foodie.
Thanks very much, Kelly.
Thanks for having me.
Listening to Comedy Album Book Club, co-production of Far From Here Comedy and Showbiz Monkeys. Tune in next week for our next guest.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.